Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. As more information surfaces about how social media influences young people, public health advocates are taking the platform companies to task. Two tribes have joined the growing list of those who are suing the big social media providers for inflicting what they say is a mental health crisis on a generation of young people. We'll hear about the lawsuit and some of the issues to watch out for when it comes to Facebook, TikTok, and the other platforms that so many people use. We're back after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of Alaska Native mothers from the village of Nutok reported on deteriorating conditions in their community at the annual Arctic Encounter Symposium in Anchorage last week. As Emily Schwing reports, climate change means the permafrost under the Alaska Native community is deteriorating and causing severe erosion. The village has been trying to relocate for more than three decades.
The five women took to the stage barefoot in solidarity for their friends and family members who live in Nutok. For many years, the village has been working with several state and federal agencies to relocate the entire community, nearly 400 people, to hire more stable ground at Mahtakvik. It's 9 miles across the Ninglik River. Carolyn George is a Nutok Village Council member.
And, you know, there is no blueprint on how to do this relocation. You know, relocating the whole community to a whole different place. And we did not know how to do it. And it's been taking too long.
There are nearly 150 rural communities in Alaska considering partial and full relocations due to climate change-driven environmental disasters. Jackie Schaefer is the director of climate initiatives at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. She's been working with Nutok for years. Schaefer says lessons from Nutok and Mahtakvik can inform those future projects.
And really, this just shows this is just one community of many that will need to be relocated in the state of Alaska. And if we can't figure it out for a community of under 400 people, there's no way when we hit Louisiana, LA, and all the other lower 48 communities that we're going to be able to figure it out.
In the meantime, Schaefer told the audience the mothers of Nutok are an inspiration. They're going to adapt, she said. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
A formal process begins this week in Anchorage to document Native boarding school abuse. The project is under the U.S. Interior Department's Federal Boarding School Initiative. The National Native Boarding School Healing Coalition will conduct 3 days of interviews. The session begins with opening ceremonies Monday at the Alaska Native Heritage Center. 40 acres near Bear Butte have been purchased by an Indigenous-led organization in the hopes of teaching the next generation of traditional values and land stewardship. The group's leader says it's also a chance to reclaim a piece of what was stolen after colonization. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's CJ Keene has more.
The Cheyenne River Youth Project has purchased the Black Hills land adjacent to a culturally significant site, Bear Butte. Group CEO Julie Garrow says when reservations are hours from these important places, it becomes a matter of access.
The Black Hills and those sacred sites are extremely important to connection to Lakota people. So being able to access them is critical in terms of raising healthy young Lakota children.
More than that, though, Garrow says reclaiming this space after over a century of broken treaty obligations stirs deep emotion.
The Supreme Court already said that land is ours. They wanted to pay for it, and we won't accept it. Is it unfair that we had to buy it? Yeah, it is. But we did what we had to do because the kids that we work with are so important.
In turn, Garrow says they can deepen the well of cultural programming they offer.
We want to teach kids about what the land can offer them in terms of food, medicinal plants. I think a lot of people refer to, you know, even just the plains as, you know, food deserts. And you know, I really don't believe that that's what that is. I think we have a lot of our traditional foods. We just can't access them because we don't have access to the land like we used to.
The land dedication ceremony will be held in private at the end of the month. I'm CJ Keene in Rapid City.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Gathering of Nations Powwow, a live event taking place April 25th, 26th, and 27th on the powwow grounds of Expo New Mexico, featuring song, dance, traders market, horse parade, and more. Tickets available at gatheringofnations.com and at the gates.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Two tribes are suing major social media companies. The Spirit Lake and Menominee tribes allege the IT companies are contributing to the disproportionately high rates of suicide among Native youth. The two lawsuits claim that platforms like Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok are deliberately tweaking the design and operation of their apps to exploit the psychology and neurophysiology of kids. The tribes join families, school districts, and others who are suing social media companies for allegedly contributing to compulsive use, poor self-esteem, and self-harming behaviors. If you'd like to contribute to our conversation today, call us at 1-800-996-2848 with your comments and questions. That number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Today on our show, we'll talk with an attorney representing the two tribes and Native experts about the relationship between social media and Native youth. We'll be talking about sensitive topics like suicide. If you think you're experiencing a crisis, you can always reach out to the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by texting 988 or calling 1-800-273-8255. That'll connect you with a trained counselor. Let's now meet our guests. Joining us from Bismarck, North Dakota, is Tim Purdon. He is an attorney and a partner with Robbins Kaplan. Robbins Kaplan is an underwriter for Native America Calling. Tim, it's good to have you on the show again. Welcome back.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Joining us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, is Andrea Wigglesworth. She is a doctoral candidate in clinical psychology at the University of Minnesota. She is an enrolled member of the Seneca Cayuga Nation and Shawnee Tribe. Hello, Andrea, and welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi, all. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Speaking with us in Phoenix, Arizona, is Marissa Duarte. She is an associate professor in the Program for Justice and Social Inquiry at the School of Social Transformation at Arizona State University. She's from the Pascua Yaqui Tribe. Good morning, Marissa, and welcome back to NAC.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And our fourth guest joins us from San Diego, California, Alec Kalak. He is a PhD candidate in public health at the University of California, San Diego, and he is a member of the Palma Band of Luseño Indians. Good morning to you as well, Alec, and welcome to our show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is a hot topic we're having today, folks. Anyone with young children today realizes and perhaps worries about the influence of social media on their young minds. I have a 10-year-old at home. I definitely think about this quite often. Tim, let's start with you. What evidence do the tribes you represent have that social media companies are contributing to a mental health crisis for their youth?
Well, Sean, the statistics are stark when it comes to Native youth populations in reservation communities. Suicide rates for Native youth are the highest among any racial or ethnic group in the United States, according to the CDC. And if you get into the data, and we've alleged in our complaint that female tribal teens commit suicide at a rate 5 times higher than their white counterparts. Okay, so I've been working in reservation communities, Indian country, most of my 30-year legal career, and really over the last 15, 16 years extensively. And you don't have to spend much time on a reservation talking to people and talking about public health or any, you know, what are the biggest problems you face as a community. And you hear teen mental health, you hear suicide rates and those sorts of things. So there is this very vulnerable population out there of Native youth living in Native communities into which has been injected social media and by these companies over the last 10 years. What we've seen nationwide is data that supports the idea that social media contributes to negative mental health outcomes for teens across the country. You now have a situation where in October, 40 state attorneys general filed suits similar to ours against the social media companies, seeking to hold them accountable for the impact, the contribution, if you will, of the social media platforms to teen mental health issues. Those state suits by the state AGs follow on the heels of, as you said, some lawsuits by school districts, individual families, those sorts of things. But given that tribes are sovereign, that the 575 federally recognized tribes are sovereign, they're impacted the same way that states are impacted, and they have the sovereign power to bring a case the same way a state AG does. We had clients that decided it was time. They were willing to step forward and bring these cases to stand, hopefully shoulder to shoulder with the state attorneys general, and to seek to hold the social media companies accountable based on the evidence that may come out as we move forward in the case. So that's how we got to this point. This litigation is unusual. We're learning from the tribes' participation in the opioid lawsuits. Well over 200 tribes filed cases, just like state attorneys general, against the opioid manufacturers and distributors 3, 4, 5 years ago. Those litigations, as we talked about actually last week, Sean, have led to over $1.5 billion in opioid abatement settlements, the money flowing directly to tribes. Mm-hmm. These two clients, Spirit Lake and Menominee, decided they wanted a seat at the table with the state AGs in these litigations.
Well, you mentioned the opioid suits and the many, many dollars in settlement monies. Is that the goal here with these suits regarding these social media companies, to get a big settlement and use that money to promote healthier mental health outcomes there in these communities?
Well, I mean, lawsuits end in one of three ways. There's a trial, or the case is dismissed, or there's a settlement. So, our clients have filed a lawsuit, and we're going to move forward with working with and amongst the other litigants that have filed suits here. I anticipate there will be additional tribes that will file over the next few months. That won't surprise me at all. We're prepared to move forward on the litigation.
And what do these tribes hope to accomplish with that litigation? What is the ultimate goal here? To have these companies completely change the way they target social media to young people, or to shut them down? What are you folks going for?
Well, I mean, we're seeking money damages to abate, if you will, the situation that we allege has been created by the social media companies. They've created a type of harm, and we're looking for ways to address that. But yeah, in most jurisdictions, or excuse me, in most litigation, you're looking for money damages. There may be additional remedies that might be appropriate here, but we're just at the first step of this journey. So we're we'll have to see where the litigation takes us. But yeah, it accountability is what I hear from my clients, the folks that we represent that are deal with these, the mental health crisis, the high native suicide rate, the communities that deal with these issues every day. They're looking for accountability.
And how exactly are you going to be able to make that link with these very, very negative, drastic mental health tragedies and crises that we're talking about? How do you connect those directly with these social media platforms?
Well, it's a little too early to start discussing in depth the proof that we have. I mean, our complaint, which is on file in a public document, it's 160 some pages, and we detail a lot of studies that have come out, federal, government studies. There are also, there are folks that have come forward, former employees from some of these companies that have come forward to talk about the business practices. When you have a situation like we do, where Native youth, in 2020, there was a survey done, and 65% of tribal youth noted in response to a survey that they were online using social media 3 to 7 hours a day, with 86% of them reporting that their main activity on social media was scrolling. So when you see that sort of data, and you look at the studies that we cite in our complaint, when you look at some of the information, folks who've come forward, testified in front of Congress, those sorts of things, it's the business practices of the companies here that we allege are creating an environment that is intended to hook these kids, get them online so that the advertising dollars go up. I mean, those are the allegations in our complaint, and as we move forward, we'll continue to gather data, but that's the sort of thing that we're talking about here.
Okay. Well, let's talk more about that statistic you just offered. 3 to 7 hours a day kids are on social media, because some people might say, hey, this is a parenting issue. Where are the parents? Show a little bit more backbone. Get these kids to limit their time on social media. And I imagine, you know, that's probably the angle that some of these social media companies might take as well. What's your response to that, Tim, when you hear people say, hey, it's a parenting issue?
Well, I think that the allegations, our complaint, are that these companies have taken, and again, these are allegations, we're going to have to prove them in court, but the allegations are that the companies have figured out a way through, and they employ business practices that hook, for lack of a better word, young people online. They get online, they start scrolling, and there are various ways, business practices, algorithms at use that are intended to keep people online. And, I don't think that most parents probably understand that is the business practice of the company that their child is interacting with. I think that as the information comes out and parents are equipped with more information, maybe that will be good, and that's, you know, another goal of this litigation is to get the word out on these business practices as well.
And Tim, so far, what are you hearing from some of these companies at this point with regard to any of these allegations? Do they seem receptive to these conversations and making changes or whatever it's going to take to make these platforms not so addictive like you described?
Well, you know, our litigation is only a few days old, so we really haven't heard back from the companies in terms of our allegations. I mean, there's an orderly process for them to answer our complaint and or move to dismiss and those sorts of things. So we'll see what they have to say. I will tell you this, though, slightly different take on the question. Since the filing of our complaints, I can report that I've been overwhelmed and, our clients as well. The feedback from Indian country, the positive feedback, the desire for more information, the coverage of this across Indian country has really, really solidified to me that once you start talking about this, people in Indian country recognize this as a problem that uniquely impacts the vulnerable tribal youth populations.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you so much for kicking us off today. I know your time is limited, so have a great rest of your day. And we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with more conversation. Two new films explore Native themes in completely different settings. The drama set on the Osage Nation puts Native culture and relationships on center stage. And the documentary, One with the Whale, follows the aftermath of a public backlash against an Alaska Native teenager. We'll hear from the producers of those films on the next Native America Calling.
My name is Tammy, and I'm a member of the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians. Smoking gave me heart disease. I used to think of cigarette smoking as something that only affected me. Then at just 44 years old, I had to look into my mom's eyes on the way into emergency heart surgery and tell her, Mommy, I promise I won't make you bury me. My tip is, think about the people in your life who love you. They go through the pain too, maybe even more than you do.
The people you love are worth quitting for. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We are talking about the effect that social media has on our Native youth. We want to hear from you, too, our listeners. If you have children at home, if you have grandchildren, nieces, and nephews, what are some negative or positive features you see on social media platforms? Do you think these platforms are good for your children, or do you think they are harmful? Let us know. Share your comments and questions at 1-800-996-2848. 1-800-996-2848. And also a reminder, we will be talking about sensitive topics like suicide and self-harm. If you yourself find yourself struggling with mental health and you need to talk to someone, call or text the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. Let's now bring in Andrea Wigglesworth, our next guest. She is at the University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities. Andrea, we just heard from Tim talking more about these lawsuits that have been recently filed by two tribes. Tell us more about the effect in terms of what's going on in a young person's mind, a young Native person's mind, when they use social media platforms and why these can be harmful.
Hi, happy to be here. And it's really interesting to get to hear kind of that perspective. So I'm glad to talk more about, you know, what's happening when young people are using social media. And I think something that the research tells us about social media is that it really has the potential for both positive and negative effects. There are, you know, opportunities to build really meaningful connections with other people for youth online and to explore their identities, which I think is really important and can be very positive. And at the same time, they also can be exposed to distressing things online, like directed harassment or discrimination. And so we think about, you know, the landscape that they are navigating when they're online, and there's a lot of opportunity for positive things, which can be really reinforcing, right? When kids or really any humans experience something positive, they want to do that thing more. But then there are also the harmful parts of being online, again, like either individually actually being discriminated against or vicariously witnessing discrimination against folks from similar backgrounds. And we know that Native youth are online quite a bit. So some data, you know, suggests between 70 to 90% of Native teens have social media accounts and are online daily or weekly. So while we know that they are engaging in these platforms and that they do have some experiences that are unique compared to other youth, we actually don't have that much data specific to kind of their online experiences. We do have, and how those relate to their mental health specifically, I should say. I'm definitely coming from the perspective of someone who studies depression and suicide risk among young people. And so we don't have a lot of those studies that really draw those connections, but we do have some. And so we do have a sense of how maybe some of these stressful experiences that they can have online could take a toll on their mental health.
Andrea, this is where I think so many people, especially parents right now, are struggling because, you know, obviously, yeah, there are benefits to social media and you hear about Native kids who are able to connect with other kids and share culture and learn and have all these wonderful exchanges. But then there are these harmful sides, and it just seems like it's all about finding this perfect balance of what's healthy and what's not. And it just seems like it's really hard to do that, find that perfect balance of responsible use of social media. Where do we start?
Yeah, that is, I think that's such a great point. And I think that part of the difficulty there is when on social media sites, there aren't very effective policies for managing some of those harms, right? And so if you think about, I found a recent study in 2021 where 94% of youth of color report having witnessed vicarious discrimination, basically discrimination of others of similar backgrounds, and 79% reported individual discrimination. With rates that high, it's hard to imagine that there are very effective policies for actually managing that discrimination and harassment on these platforms. So I think that this action that's being taken by the tribes actually is a really helpful like way to, at the minimum, put pressure on companies to implement more effective policies for protecting youth from these potential harms. I think as an individual, maybe you have some level of control over your accounts, the privacy settings on your accounts. And also, I think that it's a much bigger problem than just individual choice and individual use of social media. Because like you said, I think no matter how much we try to build this perfectly balanced or utopia of an online world, that's not the way that the internet works. And people who do not like you or who want to be in conflict with other people will still find a way to, you know, get on this content, and then youth are exposed to it even if it's not their own individual accounts.
Andrea, what would it take to gather more robust data on the social media habits of Native youth? I'd be really curious to know, you know, what the numbers really are, if you could get that information.
Yeah, that is such a great question. And I think part of what it would take, if I take a step back, is really just an investment in youth, Native youth mental health. The entire psychology field, Native youth are rarely included in research studies, rarely. And even when they are, Native communities and Native people are rarely driving that research. And so what we see is that there's this data erasure where Native folks are really not included, or if they are, they're kind of relegated to this other category. And then when they are included, it may not be, it's research on Native people, which I put in big air quotes, not research for or with Native people. And that's not to say that there aren't several great public health and clinical and other areas of psychology and mental health researchers who are doing this work now. It's increasing, but I would say by and large, historically, that hasn't been the case. And so we really need this widespread investment and for different funders and funding agencies to really put their money where their mouth is when they say that they value diverse communities or Indigenous peoples, and, you know, put the resources toward funding Native people to do this work. So I'm here at the University of Minnesota, and as a land-grant university, you know, they have these statements about their commitment to Native people. And in my own research, I see that play out. They have been funding me to do this research on Native mental health, which is really important when, you know, places say that they have these values, to actually show it by providing the resources necessary to do the research to help us get closer to mental health equity.
Andrea, what are you hearing from tribes, like, for example, the tribes that are in this lawsuit, or other tribes, or even like some of these large Native organizations that focus on youth, some of these big national nonprofits? Is anybody interested on just doing any of their own research? And because I'm even thinking like small data sets, like within a specific tribe, just getting some research on those young tribal members and their social media habits. It seems like that might be a good place to start.
Yeah, I think that's a fabulous idea. And something I'll say is that a lot of tribes are starting to, you know, do that work or have been doing that work for a long time. And one of the questions is, how far does it make it into like general knowledge, or should it? I think another thing that we know about Indian country is that we're really diverse, and that some things that are really important for one tribe or one community might not be equally important in another tribe or another community. And this is true when we think about suicide and suicide risk. Rates of suicide vary dramatically across different Indigenous communities, even in Turtle Island. And when we think about reservation-based and urban communities, we know it's a problem in general, or a concern in general, but there's a lot of variability. So I actually think that there's a ton of value in tribes doing this research on their own communities, because that's how you're going to get the best information about what your community and your youth really need. I think we can take a lot away from this general large-scale research, but when it comes to such a heterogeneous, such a diverse group where we are, you know, several hundred tribal nations and cultures, you really do need to think about how these factors really apply in your particular cultural and social context.
Andrea, really appreciate you joining us. Let's move on now to Marissa Duarte at Arizona State University. And Marissa, as Native people, let's talk a little bit about just how our relationships with social media have evolved over the years. I'm old enough to remember a world with no internet, no social media. And it just never ceases to amaze me how quickly social media took hold and just completely changed everything about the world as we know it.
Sure. Yeah, I remember that time too, actually. It's a little bit romanticized in my mind. But I also remember from those years when there was no social media, it was like a landline phone was how you got invited to a party. That, yeah. You know, if you didn't have that, if you were not home when the phone call came, or your phone was, you know, a rain, there was a major rainstorm and the phone line was down, I still, as a teenager, remember that feeling of missing out. And part of that, we now know from the psychology, is part of just healthy adolescent brain development, seeking approval from others, wanting to belong, identity formation, and so forth. So those emotions and those sort of psychological responses and development were still there. They just weren't so tightly tied to, you know, this always-on communication channel that a person could slip into their pocket. So that has changed a great deal. I remember in 2012, when we started seeing the Idle No More protests, that the indication of the flash mobs, I don't know if you recall that, but that was when different Native folks were coming together in shopping malls, at parks.
Yeah,
that was a huge sign of the rates of cell phone, mobile phone that had internet connectivity in people's pockets in Indian country, that they could come together in a flash mob, very short notice, and know to bring the drums and know to bring to wear their, you know, their clothing, their regalia. You know, they knew, they were already sort of, they understood what a flash mob is. And a flash mob is a very social media kind of culture. You know, it's a cultural effect, it's a cultural outcome. So that was a big sign that we sort of knew at that point, surveys aside, that a lot of people in the Indian country had, you know, mobile phones available, ready, personal, you know, ready to go. They were paying the phone, the expensive phone bill and so forth. And now it has sort of really bloomed into this whole sort of situation where we have young people who are, you know, influencers on TikTok, social media influencers on TikTok. We have artists who rely on digital methods. A lot of their art is really influenced by access to different digital platforms. And they basically do their own marketing and branding online through their persona online. We, of course, have businesses who have digital tribal enterprises. And so, so it's really changed. And we also, one thing that I'm really thankful about is that we also now have lots of researchers and policymakers who are knowledgeable about tech environments. So they can sort of chime in some of these hearings. You know, I'm thinking of the hearing in Congress this past January where quite a few of our representatives took, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and a lot of the platform owners to task, ask them about child safety online. You know, we have people now who can help us mediate that experience and understand those lines of questioning.
Mm. Well, I remember a few years ago when it was revealed that Instagram had its own research and knew that there were very harmful effects of social media. But Facebook at the time just wasn't really interested in publicizing a lot of that information. Marissa, what kind of advice, what kind of tips, what kind of suggestions do you have for people listening to the show today, parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, or even young people themselves to try to maintain a healthier balance like what we're talking about, trying to get that right balance of social media that's not too much and not, but still allows them to enjoy the platform and make the most of its many benefits?
Yeah, it's really challenging. One thing that's really notable is that the generation of young people now, so of minors, so let's say under the age of 18, who are online, they've really been raised by a generation. If their parent is, under the age of about 45 years old, they've really been raised by a generation that also spends around 3 hours a day online on social media platforms. So it's probably become pretty normalized in the household to have a very vibrant online life. So we do have a problem of modeling. And a little bit of a problem of setting boundaries. The parental generation, if they're under the age of 45, you know, that generation has probably posted images of their children online in photos that they intended only to share with family, but, you know, which also got them lots of likes and popularity. Everybody loves these cute kid pictures, you know? And so there actually needs to be about a couple of generations who need to sort of probably rethink some of their online activities. And that's really challenging. I remember in 2012, around the time that the Idle No More protests were happening, I was interviewing different folks who were of older generation, people in their late 50s and 60s, for their views on online activity. And what a lot of folks were describing was that they really didn't like the use of social media or anything on the phones anywhere near ceremonial occasions. because it distracted young people. It got them out of the right frame of mind to be in that moment of prayer or reverie or their commitment to what they were doing at that point of ceremony. That's, I think, a very distinctively Native and Indigenous experience that's hard to convey in other to other cultural groups, other social groups. Another concern is that, you know, learning from our natural environments means putting down the phone. You know, there is a capacity where one is learning as a scientist does, maybe collecting data or verifying types of plants. You can do these now with a great many awesome and helpful apps. But also the sensory experience of learning to see and be in presence with a landscape is something that's also, you know, for many Native people, this is a really important part of our knowing, important part of our cultural knowledge. So it's not just balancing in terms of like sussing out Instagram accounts that are a little bit more healthy from those that are promoting, you know, body dysmorphia or perhaps, promoting views that are unhealthy for Native people. But it's also a matter of, well, what am I reaching for? You know, it's not just enough to turn off your phone. What are other experiences that I'm reaching for that are healthier to replace that with?
Well, Marissa, you really had my ears ringing when you talked about, parents being online themselves a lot. And I'm a perfect example. You know, my daughter will be playing a video game or something like that. And I'll tell her, well, hey, you know, stop, you know, go pick up a book, do something else. But at the same time, I'm sitting on my phone and I feel like a total hypocrite. What kind of an example am I setting? And I think so many other parents right now and grandparents and others can relate to that because it's just so ubiquitous. We're all on these platforms. We're all using them in some way or another. Really, really interesting conversation today. Go ahead, listeners, give us a call if you'd like to join us. What are your thoughts on social media in terms of the influence it has on you, on your children, on your grandchildren, on your community? Do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? Do you think it's somewhere in the middle? Give us a call. Let us know your thoughts. 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Listening to Native America Calling, I'm Sean Spruce, and there's still time to join today's conversation about social media and its potentially damaging effects. Call us with questions and comments at 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Chanupa, who is listening on Keeley Radio in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Hello, Chanupa, and what are your thoughts on the dangers of social media on our Native youth?
Well, one thing I want to admire to those two young teachers and those ladies that you had on talking about social media. A young lady named Antoinette Janice, I had to take her aid when her family called upon me to meet with her in the public school because of law enforcement, you know, misappropriately touched her. And then they turned it around because of social media and they said it was another family. Now, I do know this from the public inquiry. There's what they used to call a long time ago, and I think both of those two people you interviewed can look at this matter. It was called the Indian Education Act, okay, which allowed bilingual people to express their heartfelt opening through education. Now, when social media becomes a grave effect, that creates controversy in a racial disparity. But nobody addresses that. And you know that too, Sean, because the reason why we say that all the time, social media might be good. And I really love myself. At the age of 66, I'm stupid when it comes to the media effect. And like our old ones once said, Tokatakya, Wowashkankile Otehikte, Chatoni, Waksape, Milahanska Topi, Ichumpshnio, Hechanoki, Shicha Walakinte. Which is so true. If we continue to focus on that purpose of what media technology is, we're going to kill the Indian inside of us. And that's what I wanted to throw at them, too. And you, too, for having a good show again. God, I love you, my little brother. And thank you for inviting me.
Hokae, I love you, too, big brother Chanupa. Andrea, please respond to Chanupa's comments and questions there, because I think what he's doing is drawing a connection to our culture, our native cultures and traditions, and maybe in some ways there's a little bit of a disconnect at times with regard to how much we use social media versus just our traditional way of being. What's your thought?
Yeah, I have quite a few thoughts, which is that I don't think it has to be an either or, and I do think there are ways to use technology and media to really, help youth have access to culture and to preserve different parts of our culture that maybe don't look quote unquote traditional, but still can be really powerful. So I think about Dr. Jillian Fish, who is an alumnus of the University of Minnesota and currently a professor at McAllister College, I believe, here in the Twin Cities. Her dissertation, I believe, focused on this platform called Originatives, and it's an virtual storytelling where Native people are able to record themselves and have these really meaningful conversations about their lives and their culture. And I think that can be a really powerful way where we can combine, traditional ways of being and storytelling with social media, with just technology and media in general, and really reach folks. I think another thing that I think about is that the majority of Native youth don't live on reservations and may or may not have a lot of direct access or resources to connect with their home communities. And so social media and technology might provide some more accessibility into those things that they might not have. And we do have to figure out as people how that works and what is appropriate to put online and what isn't. So I don't think it has to be an either or. I think there probably can be a really meaningful synthesis we can find if we are motivated to do it.
Thank you, Andrea. Maurice, I'm going to ask you one more question before we bring in our next guest, Alec. And Maurice, the next shoe to drop here is this whole debate over artificial intelligence. And we're hearing stories about these AI-generated images on social media. Where does this fit into this whole conversation with regard to harmful effects of social media and dangers when this seems like the technology is just changing and evolving faster than we can even keep up?
Yeah, this is a real challenge. Part of the challenge that we've had with the last 20 years, because it's been around, I would say it's a little more than 20 years now of different sort of efforts through Congress to sort of mediate or protect children from in different online environments. And there are several acts and legislations, and some states have different sort of rules around this that range from topics relating to privacy. There was, for a time, a concept of filters. The idea of content moderation has emerged through some of those discussions. But artificial intelligence is really introducing a whole new ballgame. And part of the reason why is because, the training data that's used to generate these online images is created by real images that people put online in the past, So that is really, many people, I had mentioned earlier, the sort of the practice that people will post photos of their kids online. And it's usually to, create a bond, especially for family who are far away. They get to get a little peek into the kids' birthday parties and things like that. So it's something that's supposed to be heartwarming. Indeed it is, right? But it also produces a risk because that data, essentially those images can be used to generate sort of content that's not really, it's not good. It's healthy, and sometimes this is what's sort of coming up with women coming forward. And there's different groups also that have looked into this with child pornography, but women coming forward and finding images of themselves that it's not them. It's been simulated. It's been recreated. They're seen saying things that are not them. And so we need to think about regulation in that capacity. And I think there are many efforts to do this. The question is, where is that regulation going to occur? So in the past, it used to be efforts to sort of regulate content online through institutions such as schools and libraries. But nowadays, the conversations tend to be more about transparency around those algorithms, transparency around sources of training data to create the algorithms that allow artificial intelligence, generative artificial intelligence to function. There's also efforts to sort of create stronger privacy
controls, including for youth. And so this would be things like in online games, a lot of kids, that's their introduction into a media environment is through just a real quick game that their parent might download on an app. And if the parent is not careful, what can happen is that that's connected to their, maybe their Google Pay, online banking of some kind. And the kid is encouraged to press on a certain thing. And if you buy this product online, then you get more points, right?
And, pretty and then soon a $5,000 a $5,000 charge, right?
Right, exactly.
And a bank statement, so yeah.
Yeah, so there needs to be sort of more technical features that kind of make it more obvious that they're entering into a new phase of things. So there's sort of technical features like that, but we have to sort of have folks who get ahead of the tech, you know, they're on the cutting edge to test these things out and see if these might actually work. And we also need to find some way to sort of regulate the major tech platforms so that they're required to allow, you know, they're required to essentially work with researchers. Let us get past some of those non-disclosure agreements so that we can, you know, figure out what's really going on.
Okay. And regulation, that's a whole nother debate there, a whole nother conversation. Marissa, thank you. Alec Kalak is our next guest. He's at the University of California, San Diego. He's been waiting patiently to join the conversation. Alec, welcome again, and help us out here. What can be done to prevent these threats we're talking about today? It just seems like they're coming at us from all angles with so much technology at work today.
Certainly. You know, it's certainly been a very exciting conversation. I've been taking notes myself. And, you know, I think when we consider social media and how it's rapidly evolving in response to, you know, artificial intelligence, you know, doom scrolling, or kind of this seemingly limitless amount of content that our youth are consuming, you know, I think we can think about, you know, different levels of intervention or action, right? We can think about, you know, more, you know, changing the, you know, behaviors of youth. We can think about, you know, regulation of platforms. We can think about, you know, more direct actions like lawsuits that, you know, start a conversation as we see, you know, here today. But I think we, you know, really need to just understand, you know, what our youth are being exposed to, right? Because, you know, social media, you know, brings communities together, you know, for good or for bad. But the content is so tailored to an individual. And a lot of that is not just because of what youth are doing, but it's because of the kind of data profile that's been generated by, you know, not just social media platforms, but also by other websites that they visit. So I was very surprised one day when I you know, went through my social media profile and I found a page about data and analytics. And it said that, you know, I would, you know, I should be able to see content relating to Native Americans and science fiction and fast food and these things that are seemingly part of my identity. But when you consider, you know, what is, you know, often portrayed for Native Americans, it's not usually something protective or about our cultures, our languages, our traditions. It's more likely to be around activism and politics. You know, you can be, you know, watching a cute, you know, dog video or seeing a litter of puppies, and then suddenly you scroll down, and then it's, you know, a announcement of a funeral due to a youth suicide in the community, or a community hundreds of miles away. But, you know, there's this kind of pan-indigenous identity or collective that comes from being on social media, where, you know, you see everything, whether it's good, bad, or everything in between.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, as you mentioned, because it is. And those are already topics that get people charged up, right? You know, the activism, the political stuff. So then it just kind of adds fire to what we're talking about with what's going on in people's brain. And Alex, some people listening to the show today might be like, you know, the train has left. This is the world we live in now. There's no turning back. We're never going to get out of this world we're in where everything is just completely connected through social media and such. What's your response to somebody sitting here just saying, you know, it's hopeless. We're never going to really solve this problem and get maintain a healthy relationship with technology. What's your thought?
You know, as a PhD candidate and also as a medical student, you know, we often kind of think about, you know, not just what a cure is, but if something is, you know, inevitable or, you know, will happen, we can also think about, proactive management and, taking steps now to address a problem that we've already identified. So in this time that we find ourselves in now with this kind of big data, artificial intelligence, it really underscores the need for tribes to exercise their sovereignty over not just things that happen within their own lands, but also with the content that is directed to their members or collected by their members when we think about big data. So, I don't see any anything that would be wrong with a tribe passing a law that restricts the collection of metadata from within the boundaries of their communities or reservations. So I think there are definitely levers of change that we can work on now, and that will certainly have some positive impact when we look, 5, 10, 15 years from now.
So are you in some way suggesting that tribes at some point could have firewalls that would protect or prevent their tribal members from access to certain types of social media?
Not necessarily. I think everyone has a right to use, emerging technologies for whatever purpose. But I think we can think about steps that can be taken to, work against health disparities. When we, kind of look at the back end of social media platforms and those who do research with social media data, there's varying levels of access to specific information. So, if you're posting a tweet or a video, depending on the platform, you don't just have a city or a state that content's originating from. You might also have latitude and longitude. So when we think about not just the data that's given to researchers, but also the data given to advertisers, we can think about, how can we better regulate social media platforms? How can we regulate advertising such that it doesn't allow for targeted, targeted messaging or content directly to a group based on where they live, but also their age or supposed race as well.
Alec, we're going to have to wrap up the show in about another minute and a half, but what more can you tell us about how it is that these platforms can be so addictive to young minds? What's the chemistry? What's going on there in a young person's mind when they're using these programs, these apps, whatever they are?
Sure. It's so complex, but I would really just say connectedness. There are so many social media platforms, and if you're not on every one, you often feel like you're missing out or kind of not being part of your kind of social atmosphere. So this kind of drive for connectedness, but also escaping the hardships in your own community, drive our youth to these platforms, and then once you're there, you're kind of stuck there. And I think that's kind of a vicious cycle that we find ourselves in.
Well, Alec, really appreciate you joining us today. Alec Kalak, he's in San Diego, California at the University of California, San Diego campus. And our other guests who joined us today, attorney Tim Purdon, Marissa Duarte, and Andrea Wigglesworth. We appreciate all of your time today and your expertise in helping us understand this increasingly complex world of social media and its impact on our young native tribal citizens. Hope you will all join us again tomorrow. We're going to have another great conversation. This one will be about two films that dive deep into native culture. I sure hope you'll tune in. Until then, I'm your host, Sean Spruce.
Skuktash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods, tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show.
Does your club, institution, or other group need custom-branded apparel? A wide variety of t-shirts, hoodies, and much more, all custom-printed or embroidered, are available from nativescreenprinting.com, a division of Skyscreen Printing, who support this program.
My precious relatives, April is National Alcohol Awareness Month. Join a support group to help yourself. If you have Medicaid or are insured through Marketplace, you may qualify for treatment options. For more information, contact your Indian healthcare provider or visit healthcare.gov. or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.